ते जनबालबागिरिबनदारी जय राधव कुंज बिहारी गोपी जन बागिरी बनदारी यशोर राम नन्ना ब्रज जन राम यमुना तेरा बन चरे यमुना तेरा बन चरे जय राधा माधव कुंज बिहारी गोपी जन बाला बागिरी बनदारी यशोर नंदन ब्रज जन रंजन यमुना तेरा बन चरे जय राधे श्याम जय राधे श्याम जय राधे श्याम जय राधे श्याम जय गिरि गोवर्धन जय गिरि गोवर्धन जय गिरि गोवर्धन जय गिरि गोवर्धन जय प्रभुपाद जय प्रभुपाद जय प्रभुपाद जय प्रभुपाद
श्रीमन भगवान वैसे श्री भक्तिवेदांत स्वामी श्रील प्रभुपाद की जय स्वयं से कहो श्री कृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानंद श्री श्री राधा श्याम सुंदर गोपाल गोपीनाथ श्याम सुंदर राधा कुंज गिर गोवर्धन की जय ग्रंथराज श्रीमद भगवत धाम की जय गौर भिमानंद ऑल ग्लोरीज टू द समस्त ग्लोरीज ऑल ग्लोरीज टू द समस्त ग्लोरीज ऑल ग्लोरीज टू द समस्त ग्लोरीज All glories to the lotus feet of Sri Sri Guru and Gauranga. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, 3rd Canto, Chapter 9, Text Number 21, Lord Brahma's Prayers for Creative Energy.
Yannabhi Padma Bhagavan Aham Asya Idyam. Loka Trayo Pakarano Yadanugrahena. Tasmai namasta udarasta bhavaya yoga. Nidra vashana vikshana nila nikshanaya. Yannabha Padma Bhagavat Aham Asya Idyam Loka Trayopakarano Yarunagrahina Tasmai Namasta Udarasta Bhavaya Yoga Nidravashana Vikshan Nali Nikshanaya
Please chant.
Yet, whose, Nabhi, navel, Padma, lotus, Bhavanat, from the house of, Aham, I, Asam, became manifested, Idya, O worshipful one, Lokatraya, the three worlds, Upakarana, helping in the creation of. Yep. Whose? Anugrahena. By the mercy. Tasmai. Unto him. Namaha. My obeisances. Take. Unto you. Uddharasta. Situated within the abdomen. Bhavaya. Having the universe. Yoga Nidra Havashana. At the end of that transcendental sleep, Vikashat, blossoming, Lanina Ikshanaya, unto him whose opening eyes are like lotuses. Translation. O object of my worship, I am born from the house of your lotus navel for the purpose of creating the universe by your mercy.
All these planets of the universe are situated within your transcendental abdomen while you were enjoying sleep. Now, your sleep having ended, your eyes are open like blossoming lotuses in the morning. Poor, poor. Brahma is teaching us the beginning of archana regulations from morning, 4 o'clock, to night, 10 o'clock. Early in the morning, the devotee has to rise from his bed and pray to the Lord. And there are other regulative principles for offering Mangal Arati early in the morning. Foolish non-devotees, not understanding the importance of archana, criticize the regulative principles, but they have no eyes to see that the Lord also sleeps by his own will. The impersonal conception of the Supreme is so detrimental to the path of devotional service that it is very difficult to associate with the stubborn non-devotees who always think in terms of material conceptions. Impersonalists always think backwards. They think that because there is form in matter, spirit should be formless. Because in matter there is sleep, in spirit there cannot be sleep. And because the sleeping of the deity is accepted in archana worship, therefore archana is maya. All these thoughts are basically material. To think either positively or negatively is still thinking materially. Knowledge accepted from the superior source of the Vedas is standard. Here in the verses of the Srimad Bhagavatam, we find that archana is recommended. Before Brahma took up the task of creation, he found the Lord sleeping on the serpent bed in the waves of the water of devastation. Therefore, sleeping exists in the internal potency of the Lord, and this is not denied by pure devotees of the Lord, like Lord Brahma and his disciplic succession. It is clearly said here that the Lord slept very happily within the violent waves of the water, manifesting thereby that he is able to do anything and everything by his transcendental will and not be hampered by any circumstances. The Mayavadi cannot think beyond this material experience, and thus he denies the Lord's ability to sleep within the water. His mistake is that he compares the Lord to himself. And that comparison is also immaterial thought. The whole philosophy of the Mayavadi school, based on not this, not that, neti, neti, is basically material. Such thought cannot give one the chance to know the Supreme Personality of Godhead as he is. Om Jnanatam Adandasya Shemanjana Shalakaya Chaksu Unnalitam Yenatasmai Sri Guru Venamaha Mukam Karoti Vachalam Pandum Lam Jayati Girim Yakripa Tamaham Bande Shri Guru Dunitaryo Vancha Kapaturivischa Kripa Sindhi Bahevacha Patitanam Pavanevyo Vaishnavevyo Namo Namaha Jaya Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Sri Gadadhar Sri Vasudeva Gaura Bhaktivinoda Hare Krishna 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 Hare Hare
Hare Rama Hare Rama Rama Hare Hare.
My only constant companion, my only friend, my guru, my wealth, that which has delivered me, my great fortune and the source of my good luck, the form through which I taste pleasure, my obeisances unto you, O Srimad Bhagavatam. I offer my respectful obeisances to you, O Srimad Bhagavatam. By your recitation, one attains transcendental bliss because your syllables shower pure love of God. You are to be served by everyone, always, for you are an incarnation of Lord Krishna. So we're continuing with Lord Brahma's prayers for executing his service. As has been mentioned several times in this chapter, this is a very instructive chapter. As devotees, we should never think that we're able to perform our service, whatever our service may be, without the mercy, without the blessings, and ultimately without the sanction of the Lord and his devotees. When we begin to think that we're independent of these two great personalities, when we begin to think we have certain self-made abilities and capabilities, that's when we step into the world of Maya. I'm the doer, I've got so many qualifications. I'm quite capable. Yes, I can accomplish this, that, and the other. I. So this is the world of Maya. And we have this type of mentality that I can do all these things because, after all, I'm a self-made man. This is the American, you know, image, self-made man. Pull yourself up by your bootstraps, you know. I started with nothing, and here I am, an old man still with nothing. I've been very successful. So we are wholly and solely dependent on the mercy of others for our successes. And this isn't just a spiritual point. It's not like, oh, this is only applicable in the spiritual realm. It isn't even a material point. It's a reality of our life. From the very beginning, we're dependent upon our parents for the most basic of training. And even the most basic of training so that we don't soil ourselves. We have to be trained how to do that. No, don't hear it. Use it, you know, like that. So, I mean, what abilities do we have? Nothing. But by the mercy of others, we receive guidance, we receive instruction. And even that, we can't do without the assistance of those that we're totally dependent upon. So, if we just examine, this is the story of our life. Complete dependence upon others, regardless of who we are, what our situation is. And ultimately, even if due to the most immense false ego, we think, yeah, but I'm not dependent on anybody, we're still dependent on higher sources, adiatmic, adibodhic, adibhavik. We can't control this body. When the eyes have to blink, they blink. You know, they say contest kids have, look at each other to see who can go the longest without blinking. Ultimately, you have to blink. Somebody's going to blink at some point. You know, just the ability to control our breathing, control the passing, all of these different things, we have no control of them. When the time is necessary for those to happen, they happen. We have no control over the weather. If we did, we would not be having 105 degree temperature right now. If we had control over the weather, Panchagoda wouldn't be here. He'd still be in Vrindavan where it's 125 degrees. So we have no independence. But we're very, very happy to try and proclaim this independence. So this mood of dependency is the entire chapter of this, the entire mood of this chapter. Now in the opening paragraph here, Prabhupada establishes very strongly the need for and the importance of deity worship. Prabhupada says in several places that the presence of the deity in the home is a necessity for the household. It changes the home from a place of sense gratification to a temple. Everything done here is for the pleasure of the Lord. As opposed to, yeah, it's just a place where you can sleep and whatever else. So, Prabhupada indicates here that this process of having the deity home begins with the process of waking the deities. Now, in the Govinda Lilamrita, it's a very, very nice description of Krishna being woken in the morning. At dawn, Rishabhanupur is very beautiful. In that peaceful atmosphere, all the Priyashakis, headed by Sudama, headed by Sridham, are awakened by the sound of Balaram's buffalo horn. This is indicative. Balaram gets up first. So if you are a follower of Lord Balaram, you get to get up early in the morning. And Balaram's waking all the other cowherd boys with his buffalo horn. I remember in some places in our Brahmachari days, you'd have that one devotee that would get up early and then come into the Brahmachari ashram at 3:30 in the morning with a conch shell and blow it really loud. I don't think there's anything worse than being woken out of a sound sleep by a conch shell in the air. Continuing on. Then the Upashakas, the greater assembly of cowherd boys, you have the Priyashakas, the very intimate, Priya indicates intimate, and the Upashakas, the expanded group, they come together and they congregate with Sridham and Sudham. After performing their morning duties, they all go to the town of Nandishwar to get the darshan of Krishna. Sridham, Sudham, Dama, Subala, Bhadrasena, Stoka Krishna, Mahabala, Kinkini, Ujvala, and Gopa. I've never heard any devotee named King Kini. Ujjvala, Gopata, Arjuna, and the other cowherd boys thus traveled to the headquarters of Nanda Maharaj while completely maddened with ecstatic prema. The first thing in the morning, they're already in ecstasy. Arriving at the palace, they stand out in the courtyard and very jubilantly call out, Hota, Hota, Pata Krishna! Get up, get up! Where are you, Krishna? At that time, Krishna's boyfriends, Gobata, Bhadrasena, Subal, Stoka Krishna, Arjun, Sridham, Ujjval, Dama, the same list there, arrive and hastily and joyfully with Sri Balaram go to the courtyard. They stand together and call, Krishna, Krishna, get up! It's time to go to your beloved cowshed! Then the boys, along with Mother Jasoda, go to Krishna's sleeping chambers, where he is presently reclining. Now, of course, we know from other readings, Krishna hasn't just been sleeping all night long. He's been out having some fun. Now he's trying to catch a little bit of Z's, as we would say in the modern language. The essential complexion of a fresh rain cloud, the dark boy, is covered with yellow sheets. He is situated upon a fine jeweled bedstead and sleeping. One should meditate upon him there on an ornately jeweled temple bed. Lying upon a pleasant bedstead, Nandasuta is fast asleep amongst a variety of colorful pillows. This is a common joke amongst husbands and wives about having so many pillows on the bed. Well, here we see Krishna has amongst the various colorful pillows. At that time, everyone first watches him for a while. Imagine you come into Krishna's room, he's sleeping on his bed. Just kind of sit there and look for a bit. Nanda Rani personally performs the Mangal Arti, after which she gives him benedictions while cutting freshly cut barley and durva grass and offering it to him. Then the servants step forward and try to stir him from his rest. Jasoda calls him to get up from his rest, and with a damp cloth, she cleans his face. In this regards, there is a song by Gokula Chandra Das, and it gives the word and the melody, and I can't do it any justice, so I'm just going to read the translation. Get up, my Nanda Nandana. The night is over, and the morning is here. Out in the courtyard, all of your young boyfriends are standing and waiting for you. Thus, Jasoda Rani exclaims to him while applying a washcloth to his face, how much happiness you get by this sleeping and lying about. I cannot understand it a bit. Almost like a parent of a teenager, right? Open up your eyes and see the sun has arisen. Sridham and Sudham are also calling very loudly, Uto bayo he kanu! Get up, my dear brother, O Kanu. Finally, stretching his limbs, the beautiful Yadava Rai promptly gets up, goes and washes his face, picks up his water pot, and goes to join his friends. So this is Krishna's waking up in the morning. This is the meditation that we should have as we begin our day. Now, practicing and aspiring sadhakas, we don't have this kind of relationship to Krishna. This isn't where any of us are at. We see a different mood here in the prayers of Lord Brahma to the Lord as he's trying to wake him up. Now, we have also prayers that we use in this similar way. So Shavadaro Karano Bhagavan Vividya Preman Spitena Nayanam Buruham Vijimam Uttaya Vishva Vijaya Cha No Vishadam Madhya Griha Madhya Grida Pananaya Purusha Purana Deva Papanati Hara Prasaram Kurikeshava Avalokanadanina Buyamam Paya Hachucha Jaya Jaya Kripa Moya Jagatirnata Sarva Jagatirnata Kota Subhadushkivada. Now anybody that's done any deity service knows these prayers. The Lord, who is supreme and is the oldest of all, is unlimitedly merciful. I wish that he may smilingly bestow his benediction upon me by opening his lotus eyes. He can uplift the entire cosmic creation and remove our dejection by kindly speaking his directions. O Keshava, O infallible Lord, O you who can remove the distress of the surrendered souls, please bestow your mercy upon me by again awarding me with your transcendental glance. all glories to the merciful Lord of the universe. O Lord, please cast your auspicious glance upon all the worlds. So if we look at these two scenarios here, we see a very distinct difference in the two moods present. O Lord, you are the oldest of the old. You remove all of our distress. You uplift the entire creation, as opposed to, hey, my friend, get up. The cows are waiting. We've got fun to be had. So completely different mood, one of awe and reverence, and one of friendship and companion. So we should be very clear in knowing that we're in that first category, not in the second category. We can appreciate, we can relish, we can even aspire that maybe someday down the millions of births from now, we'll be in that second one, but it is not our position at this present time. What is our position at this present time? Well, we take a completely contrasting look at this waking up process as it's indicated and applied to the jiva souls. And Bhaktivinoda Thakur gives us that famous song, jiv jago, gaura chandra bole, kota nidra jayamaya pi sachira kole. Baji bo balia eshe, samsara bitare, bulia vohile tume, avid jara bari. Tomara laite ame, hoinu avatara, ami bina bandhu ara kea che tomara. Ene che oshori maya, oshori. Ene che oshori maya, nashi bada lagi, harinama mahamantra lau tumi magi. Lord Governor is calling, wake up, sleeping souls, wake up, sleeping souls. How long will you sleep in the lap of the witch called Maya? You have forgotten the way of devotional service and are lost in the world of birth and death. I have descended just to save you. Other than myself, you have no friend in this world. I have brought the medicine that will wipe out the disease of illusion from which you are suffering. Take this Maha Mantra. Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. So this song of Bhaktivinoda Thakur, it's clear and irrefutable evidence of the vast difference between us, the struggling jiva, the empowered creative servant of the Lord, Lord Brahma, and the eternal lila associates, all the priyashakas and upashakas that are there with Krishna in the morning when he wakes up. We have to understand this difference. We have to appreciate this difference. And in order to advance in devotional service, we have to be aware of this difference. In the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna goes even a step further and gives an additional solid and pointed understanding of the position of the jiva. Verse we all know, Maya Vamsa Jiva Loki, Jiva Bhuta Sanatana, Mana Shastra Indriyani, Prakriti Shtani Karshati. Now, the living entities in this conditioned world are my eternal fragmental parts. Due to conditioned life, they are struggling very hard with the six senses, which include the mind. So in this verse, these three words, Karshati, Shastra Indriyani, and Mana. Struggling, or as Prabhupada says in the purport, grappling very hard with the six senses, which include the mind. So this is why we cannot assume that we're in this position, Lord Brahma, who's self-realized, or in the position of the Priyashakas, who are just out having fun herding cows and rolling around in the forest with Krishna. Because Karshati Shastriyendrayani Mana. We're struggling very hard with the six senses, which include our mind. It's a wonderful point from Bhartahari and one of his classes that I've quoted a few times now since I heard it. It's so great. He says, we accept that we're not the body. We're not so sure we're not the mind. We're not convinced about that yet. So Prabhupada mentions in the purport to that verse in the Gita, in this verse, the identity of the living entity is clearly given. Clearly given. There's no question. If something's not understood, you know how sometimes you get, the famous example is that that assembled item you ordered in the mail from the catalog that comes from China, and it's got the instructions which were translated from Chinese to English by somebody that probably had English as a fourth or fifth language, maybe. And you're just looking at it, I don't get this. This just isn't clear how to put this together. You know, and when you get it done, you get this pile of parts left over that aren't supposed to be left over. Say, this is just not clear to me how to do this. But here, this verse, Prabhupada says, the position of the limit is clearly given. Karshati, Shastra Indriyani, and Mana. They're struggling. First of all, they're my eternal parts. That's given. But they're struggling because they've accepted this material life. Now, Prabhupada continues. The conditioned soul is bound up as though shackled by iron chains. He is bound up by the false ego, and the mind is the chief agent which is driving him in his material existence. There are great yogis that can control the senses. Controlling the mind, you know, takes a bit more effort, a bit more endeavor. Even we can, okay, I follow the four regular principles very nicely, but what am I thinking about? So we have to be very conscientious of this activity of the mind. The chief agent of having us bound up by our false ego is the mind. So in this state, we can't expect, neither can we even hope for a relationship where we're calling out, hey, wake up, Krishna, time to go play with the cows. So we have to clearly understand this difference. Now, yet we know that the spiritual position that we want to achieve is that position, is that type of intimate relationship. And Prabhupada confirms this from a shastra called the Madhya Dhyanaya Shruti. The Sanskrit on this is even more complex than the Brahma Samhita sloka that we use for this chapter. When a living entity gives up this material body and enters into the spiritual world, he revives his spiritual body. And in his spiritual body, he sees the Supreme Personality of Godhead face to face. He can hear and speak to him face to face. And he can understand the Supreme Personality of Godhead as he is. Such a wonderful understanding. Or as Bhaktivinoda Thakur says to us, get out of the lap of the witch called Maya. Same thing. You just have to, whoever you're speaking to, you have to adapt it accordingly. So when you're speaking to great elevated personalities, yes, you get the spiritual realization, you revive, you can see. And when you're speaking to completely kindred, get out of the witch. Just stop this nonsense activity. Now, in alluding to the process of archana, or worship, one of the nine basic processes of devotional service, Prabhupada says, those who do not understand the importance of archana, who criticize the regulative principles, are foolish devotees. Now, it's a little unclear whether Prabhupada is indicating regulative principles as we know the four regulative principles, or regulative principles as the 64 regulative principles for worshiping the deity. But either way, restriction, guidelines, and activities guided by what needs to be done in Shastra, those are all there. And those that reject that, those that don't accept the importance of worshiping Radha Shamsundar in their most beautiful form here, foolish non-devotees. How careful we want to be not to have that label attached to ourselves. Those of us that work in the other world there, the secular world as it's called, we know what foolish non-devotees are. We know what their habits are, what their speech is, what their activities are. We don't want to be associated in that way. That's not the desire. Now, anybody who's listened at all to Prabhupada's lectures or studies Prabhupada's books knows how enthusiastic he is to chop down the impersonalist idea of the Supreme. This is like Prabhupada's trademark, you know, thus his pranam mantras, you know, sunyavadi paskacha. So here in this purport, he starts out almost immediately. And in this first sentence, it carries a very stark warning to us as we're on the path of devotional service. The impersonal conception of the Supreme is very detrimental to the path of devotional service. If we are desirous of achieving any one of the nine processes of devotional service, the understanding of the impersonalist idea is just doesn't fit, because all nine of those processes require a relationship. All nine of those processes hinge upon service to a particular personality. So even Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he's warned us about this, as Prabhupada's doing here. He says, Mayavadi Vasya Sunile Haya Sarvanasha. Simply by hearing the Mayavadi interpretation of the Shastras, one becomes doomed. Doomed. I mean, there's not, when you're doomed, I mean, there's practically no hope. So, to be clear, the impersonals have no idea of Archana. They have no idea of the personality of the Lord. And this means that they're not free from, as Prabhupada says, the iron chains that shackle them. And therefore, they don't get to advance to a level of achieving a spiritual body and seeing the Lord face to face. This is our goal. Now, this is made very easy in the form of the deity. Prabhupada says in one lecture, this was in Tehran, Prabhupada says that the form of the deity, we see forms, we are able to perceive things with our senses, therefore out of mercy and compassion to us, Krishna appears in the form of the deity. But we should not think that the form of the deity and Krishna are different. This takes some faith. This takes some practice. This takes some service to understand that this is the Supreme Personality of Godhead standing here, Radha-Shyam Sundar. If we think any different, we fall into this category of foolish non-devotees. So, why? Why is this so important? Prabhupada gives us this answer very, very clearly. He says, because the impersonalists, they always think backwards. They always think backwards. An amazingly simple but very cutting insult. It derides and diminishes what might pass in our world as so-called intelligence. In any field of thought, or study, or labor, or academic, or professional pursuit, the goal is to move forward. The goal is to make progress. To be moving backwards means to not making any headway, not making any progress, not going anywhere. To not be accomplishing movement towards the goal you want to achieve. Now, of course, if you have no goal, you're going backwards even more because you haven't even got the basic figured out. And we see this many times in our modern world, people with no drive. Now, that's not to say everyone should be passionate, you know, got to achieve this. But we have to have some drive to move forward in anything that we're doing, you know. If you have no drive, you don't get anywhere. If you've got a car that the transmission just doesn't interact with the engine, which is driven by the pistons, if that's just not all connected and you don't have any force going, you're not getting anywhere. You know, you're just stuck behind that guy on a two-lane road, you know, just putting along. You're trying to get somewhere. So this is necessary to have this kind of drive. And this helps us to achieve the goal instead of becoming stagnant, instead of, as Prabhupada says, thinking, moving backwards. In a lecture in Mumbai in 1974, Prabhupada was speaking on the 25th chapter of this third canto, the appearance and the teachings of Kapiladev. Now, as we all know, Kapila was the son of Devahuti and Kodama Muni. And Kapila's conversations with his mother are referred to as Kapila Devahuti Samvada, or the discussions between Kapila and Devahuti. Kodama Muni, of course, once his son came of a certain age, he retired, went back to being a renounced yogi. You know, this is having a goal. He was a very advanced renounced yogi in the forest. He took up this responsibility as a progenitor, accepted a wife. When that business was finished, then he went back to the forest. Never for a second forgot that particular goal. So, at any rate, when he left, Devahuti and Kapila were in each other's company, and Kapila gave many wonderful instructions. His teachings are based... His teachings are based on the Shankara philosophy in 24 elements of nature. Temporary nature, the eternal nature, devotional service, and how all of this requires self-control to understand and move forward. The 24 basic elements, the pradhana as it's referred to, are there, and how to go beyond those elements, how to go beyond that level of understanding is the process of devotional service, as given by the nine ways to serve in devotional service. Now in this same lecture, Prabhupada refers to a second kapila, who he calls Devahuti Sutta. This is the kapila that we study from. And then he refers to atheist kapila. This is his second description. And this is a so-called incarnation of kapila, who teaches about the same Shankara philosophy, the 24 elements, the pradhana, but stops there. That leaves the whole realm of devotional service not touched. And this is how the impersonalists are understood to be thinking backwards. How to engage ourselves in devotional service, how to get out of this covered sense, this is the details that is there in the instructions of Kapila Deva. And of course, this will be discussed, you know, some months later down. We're on chapter 9, that's chapter 25. Maybe this time next year even, who knows. So, while dwelling on this activity of the Lord in his sleeping mode, and how the impersonalist dismissed this, I took note of the description Prabhupada gives of the Lord sleeping on Ananta Sesha in this great ocean. He uses the words, resting on the violent waves of the water, and how the Lord is happily sleeping on those waves. Now, we all know that if you're lost at sea and there's a violent storm, that this is not just any ocean, this is the ocean of devastation it mentions. And it's not just like, you know, laying in, what was it? When I lived in Fort Myers Beach, Buddy Narayan Prabhu at the time, Swami now, came to visit. And we took him for a swim in the Gulf of Mexico. And now, this is a California boy used to the Pacific Ocean. I said, so? He said, yeah, it's nice if you want to lay in a warm bathtub. Because there's no action. There's very little in the way of waves. But on the Pacific or Atlantic Ocean, we see there's much more in the way of waves. What to speak of the ocean devastation? Violent waves. And this unit's just laying there, sleeping. Just like once you get a baby to sleep, generally they'll sleep right through anything. They're just very happy, very soundly enjoying that sleep. There might be some rain, there might be some thunder, there might be lightning, but as one is deep enough in that sleeping state, they might not even notice. Like I got up this morning and went out to take care of Tulsi Devi outside, and I saw that, oh, it must have rained overnight. Because everything was wet, the ground was wet, all the bushes and plants and tulsi were all wet, and there was water on the sidewalks. I didn't hear a thing. It was deep in the mode of ignorance, deep sleeping. So what to speak of the Lord, he doesn't notice and is not disturbed by these violent waves of the vast ocean destruction. It's completely transcendental to such goings on. Now, this is the state of mind that as a devotee we hope to attain. To be undisturbed. To not be bothered by the circumstances surrounding us. To not be bothered. Let me just find this in the purport here. Prabhupada says, not hampered. Let me read the whole sentence. The Lord is able to do anything and everything by his transcendental will and is not hampered by any circumstances. We're hampered by every circumstance. It's It's too hot, it's too cold, it's raining, I don't want to go outside, I didn't get enough sleep, I'm hungry, I need to get, all these different things. Every external circumstance affects us. And how advanced we are in devotional services, how much we're not affected by those things. Ahoitake apatiyata, in first canto of the Bhagavatam. The nature of devotional services is uninterrupted, undisturbed, unmotivated. So is that our devotional service? That's what we need to strive for. Now, our effort in devotional service to become equipoised like that is not to be compared to the Lord laying on Seishananta in this violent ocean of destruction, but it's the same principle. And this is how we understand things, by principle. We might appear that something is there, but it doesn't mean it's exactly the same. Prabhupada gives the example, just like a prisoner may be in prison, a criminal, he's in prison, and he's sentenced to whatever, you know, number of years or decades or a life sentence, whatever. And then the governor comes to inspect the prison. And the governor comes within the walls of the prison, even goes into the restricted areas of the prison and looks. Now, if the criminal looks and thinks, oh, now the governor is a criminal too. I mean, nowadays that may well be the case. Matter of fact, many times it is the case. But if the criminal looks and says, oh, the governor is also a criminal, therefore I am just like the governor. No, I'm sorry, because the governor can turn around and leave at his will, and the criminal is still restricted to that little, what is it, 4x8, 2x6, whatever the size, they've got some measurement to, for their self. The Supreme Personality of Godhead, we want to be able to have a similar mindset, but it doesn't make us one with the Lord. And this is the great fault of the impersonalist, to make that mistake. So, one final word here. Prabhupada says that the main theme of the Mayavadi, or the impersonalist, is 18, 18, 18, 18. Not this, not that, not this, not that. It just diminish everything, reject everything. And then Prabhupada delivers a final note of snuffing, completely destroying the impersonalist ideas that are totally horrid to a bhakta. The philosophy, the principles, the engagement of the impersonalist is devotee doesn't even want that, not even interested. So Prabhupada does that with this phrase. Such thoughts, the backward thinking of the impersonalist, such thoughts cannot give one the chance to know the Supreme Personality of Godhead as he is. As he is. Not as they conceive him, not as they project him, but as he is. A famous story with Prabhupada's Bhagavad Gita as it is. Why not just Bhagavad Gita? There's so many Bhagavad Gita. This is Bhagavad Gita as it is. So to know the Supreme Personality of Godhead as he is, the process of the impersonal lifestyle, the impersonal philosophy, must be completely given up. Because as Mahaprabhu says, it will poison us. It'll completely devastate us. So for this understanding, we are eternally grateful to Srila Prabhupada for giving us some direction, giving us some understanding, and giving us some hope that maybe one day we can address Krishna in the morning, hey, let's go out and play with the cows, have some fun in the forest, and not have to, you know, be figuring out how we're going to get out of this comfy bed with his assorted pillows and comforters and air conditioning and ceiling fan and all these. Oh, I'm so happy here. Oh, I got a new pillow. It's really nice. I don't want to give this up. So we get this opportunity here. So thank you all very much. We'll finish there. If there's a few short questions, I have just a few moments before I have to head on. Mother Murgatmaka, then Panchagoda. Let me just here, just one second.
Thank you, Prabhu. I don't understand what this not this, not that means. Is it what's not this and what's not that?
Everything. That's the insanity of the impersonalist philosophy. It's not this, it's not that. It's
what's
not
it? It.
Anything. Everything. Seriously. That's the impersonalist philosophy. That what? This isn't. Prabhupada gives the example in the purport there how they see that the Lord is sleeping, that Archana worship that we engage in the deity sleeping. Therefore, that's mundane, that's material, because spiritual has to be the opposite of material. So if Krishna is sleeping, that means Krishna is material, therefore we don't accept. So everything is just rejected all. None of it has any bearing. Come on, you're more advanced than you know that question.
No, I'm just starting to notice this and I don't understand it.
Punch it go to Cooper.
You mentioned that Srimad Bhagavatam's incarnation of the Lord.
I didn't mention Sanatana Goswami did.
Well, you mentioned Sanatana Goswami. You mentioned it also.
Yes.
That Sanatana Goswami. But when Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya was, you know, not accepting Lord Chaitanya because of Tri-Yuga, Krishna in the Vedas it says he only appears in three yugas. So this Chanavatar, this hidden incarnation, also the Bhagavatam. So is there some special worship that we should be doing for Bhagavatam, like a deity worship, and if the Lord's in the form of the Bhagavatam, is there some sort of worship we're supposed to be doing? Or?
Interesting. I was in Jaipur at Radha Govindaji Mandir once, and they were beginning the Bhagavat Saptaha, and reading from the Bhagavat, and it full arti, the Bhagavatam sitting on the seat like this, I mean on the stand in front of the seat, they come out, do full arti. Incense, lamp, flower, fanning it, putting a garland on it, chandan, you know, many places Bhagavatam is on the altar. I know in the old, I know in the old St. Louis temple back in the day, Bhagavatam had a nice wooden asana was on the altar. You would go and take the Bhagavatam off and break your stick and then go back. So yeah, that kind of worship can be and is very beneficial for us to do for the Bhagavatam, because it is an incarnation of Krishna. It does shower pure love of God with its syllables, just the syllables. Fortunately, even if the syllables are poorly pronounced, you know, but we should make an effort to pronounce them correctly. Yeah. Constant companion, my friend, my guru, my wealth, that which delivers me, my great fortune, the source of my good luck. Everybody buys that lottery ticket. Oh, I want that's some good luck. I got to win this lottery ticket. No, you want good luck. Study Srimad Bhagavatam. Read Srimad Bhagavatam. Worship Srimad Bhagavatam. The form through which I taste pleasure. Oh, I want to enjoy. You want to enjoy? Read Srimad Bhagavatam. The form through which I taste pleasure.
Is reading also worshiping?
Yeah, reading is also worshiping. Yeah, hearing, chanting, yeah. All right, we'll finish there. Thank you very much. All glories to Srila Prabhupada. All glories to Srimad Bhagavatam. Pretty bold.
Thank you.